In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, we'll be flexing our quads, SSDs, Razer's lethal Blade 15 and Core X, ThinkPad X1 Downward Dog Yoga, ARM's new AI, glorious G-Sync and HDR goodness. You tell us what to give away, and I'm probably going to sound like Yoda. Next. Welcome back to another episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, where I'm thoroughly hoarse and will try not to offend you with such a torrid voice. Gentlemen, welcome back. How are we doing this week? How's everything in your neck of the woods? Are you sucking in pollen at a mad clip like I am? That's the problem with me currently. Yeah,
today is definitely the worst day pollen-wise in my area. Just as soon as the rain stopped and the sun came out, I was walking the dog earlier, and I literally could smell the pollen and feel it on me. Definitely hitting hard in here in Connecticut.
Nasty stuff in the Northeast. Chris, are you getting your fill of the yellow flying goodness? Badness?
Yep, same deal here. My nice blue car is now a pastel yellow color from all the pollen on it, so that's not too fun.
Yeah, I'm trying not to act sick, but I've definitely lost a bit of my voice, and it's just going to have to be one of those things. Maybe I won't talk so much this time. I'll let you guys do the talking. How's that sound?
Yay!
The crowd goes wild. All right, well, we've got a lot going on. We're going to be doing some traveling next week, so we may have some showtime interruption next week, but this week we figured we'd hit it real quick with some interesting tech headlines. There's been some really sort of big reverberations, new things coming into the market over the last week, and we've got some new feature coverage as well at hothardware.com on the review side. So let's dive right in and kick this into turbo mode a little bit today. So Marco, Micron and Intel announced shipment of first quad-level cell QLC NAND solid-state drives. First in the industry for Intel and Micron, a joint effort there. What do you know about this new stuff? Is it all whiz bang?
So we know a little bit. We don't have tons of details on the actual NAND because these Intel and Micron tend to talk about the actual products based on the NAND rather than the devices themselves. But yeah, so this is cool stuff. If you remember back in the early days of SSDs, we had SLC, single level cell, NAND flash. That became MLC, multi-level cell, which became TLC, triple level cell. And now this is the first quad level cell. So what that basically means is there's a 33% higher density per cell. So you can now, what's going to happen is we'll see higher capacity, lower cost drives eventually based on this QLC NAND, and SSDs will further push down in price, come up in capacity, and sort of blur those lines between really cheap, inexpensive hard drives and NAND-based solid-state storage. So there was a couple of parts to the announcements, though. So for those unfamiliar, Intel and Micron have been working together for a few years to develop NAND. Now, that collaboration is coming to an end. This particular first announcement for QLC NAND is for a 64-layer product. They will also be collaborating and have announced that a 96-layer product is coming in the future, so even higher capacities. But that 96-layer QLC will be sort of the last of the collaborative efforts between Intel and Micron. After that, the companies are going to do their own thing. I have a feeling Intel will probably focus on 3D XPoint, though obviously NAND is going to still be a big deal for a long time to come. And then Micron announced an actual product. So Intel didn't announce an SSD based on this NAND yet, but Micron did. Micron announced the 5210 series Ion SATA SSDs, which will target enterprise applications. Not a ton of detail on the drives themselves, other than it's a typical 2.5-inch SATA form factor. But they're going to offer capacities. Now, check this out. Capacities from 1.92 terabytes up to a huge 7.68 terabytes. That's a big 2.5-inch SSD.
yeah. Wow. So in 2.5 inches, you're getting almost 8 terabytes of data. You know, a hard drive would have to be 3.5-inch, and it's probably going to be a thick sucker as well. this stuff is initially being targeted at the data center, at the enterprise, where cost per bit is critical, and endurance and read speeds. I think I read that it's optimized for reads. Reads are generally what, you know, data centers and database servers rely on for performance. Does this technology look like it'll bleed into the mainstream and help drive mainstream costs down and density up as well?
I think eventually, once it's ramped up and, you know, there's copious amounts of it, yeah, it will definitely trickle into basically all markets. It just makes sense because it's more affordable to produce, or it will be more affordable, you know, on a capacity, you know, in terms of capacity. So right. Yeah, you know, basically all of the latest SSDs that have been introduced are using TLC. So this will, all of those sort of mainstream SSDs using TLC, probably expect QLC versions, at least for partners that use IMFT NAND flash memory.
Right. Yeah. IMFT, Intel Micron something technology. Yeah. That's the conglomerate. And I also noticed that this is 3D NAND, right? So stacked die. This is initially a 64 layer, but they're coming out with a 96 layer as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 96 layers coming. I don't think they were clear on exactly on a date, but the initial products are based on a 64 layer QLC NAND, but 96 layer is coming. So, you know, even increased capacity per die there.
Do we know what the fab technology was, like the geometry, die geometry?
No, they did not talk about it. Not a lot of detail. I also asked about endurance specifically because, you know, as we went from SLC to MLC to TLC, technically the NAND offers less endurance, but ultimately the endurance is going to be based on how the drive is configured and the firmware and how much over provisioning. So they didn't really want to talk about that. I suspect that we'll see similar endurance to current TLC based drives in the future.
Yeah. It just blows my mind. And the reason I asked that question is it just blows my mind where this thing is probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 20, maybe 14 nanometer rather, 10 to 14 nanometer die geometry. And to stack that, you know, at that kind of lithography, to stack that 96 layers, all the connections that go in, it's just amazing stuff what they're doing these days with NAND and just solid state storage in general, you know?
Yeah, I mean, all of the NAND being produced is getting gobbled up. So, you know, they're going to try to advance the tech and figure out ways to make it bigger, faster, cheaper, you know, yeah. Until demands are met, which is not happening anytime soon.
Yeah. Chris, you're a data center guy. How much of your stuff is solid state that you deploy in the in your IT admin role?
Where we are, we're still largely mechanical in our data center. We do have solid state caching, but it's still not to that point when it comes to the end consumers where flash makes the most sense unless you're really thrashing your drives. We're not pushing our internal sands that hard. So right now we're okay on mechanical drives, but I think when we do a revamp in the next couple of years, we'll definitely be looking at flash very, very hard.
You got to believe endurance in general over time is going to be better than, you know, a 10 or a 15K spinning hard drive in the case of a high-end SAS drive or something like that, you know? Yeah. So it's inevitable, but yeah, it's all cost right now. And the good folks at Intel and Micron are driving that cost with higher density capability. So that's good stuff that will trickle down to the end user, like you folks that might be watching in the not so distant future, hopefully. But right now, first introduction into the market from Micron and Intel, the quad level cell NAND flash, QLC flash. Good stuff. Hey, so we also had another announcement this week from the folks at Razer. And this was pretty impressive stuff, I have to admit. I saw it in New York myself. Razer unleashes the Blade 15 gaming laptop with Coffee Lake H, GTX 1070, and a new Razer Core X. Now, there's the Razer laptop. It is a 15-inch machine. Coffee Lake H, obviously, you can get up to 6 core in the machine. And it's a beautiful looking device, super thin. They claim it's the thinnest 15 inch notebook on the market currently. There you can go, right? You see it right there. It's pretty thin. I don't quite have the numbers in front of me, but it is, you know, matte black finish, really nice styling, that great Razer Chroma keyboard, RGB keyboard technology that Razer is famous for. And of course, they went with the design signature that a lot of folks are going after now, and that is the ultra thin bezel display. And so this one specifically has a number of options, but super thin bezels, almost, I would say, as thin as Dell's Infinity Edge displays, maybe not quite, but nice and thin, really just an efficient use of display area. And the display itself, there's a number of options. There's actually a really cool one for gamers, a 1080p 144 hertz panel option. Then there's, standard full HD option. So if you're a high-speed gamer, you're looking for high refresh rate, there's that option. And they've also got a 4K option as well that is touch-enabled and it's a 60 hertz panel. Really impressive-looking laptop. I was thoroughly enamored by it. It is sub 5 pounds significantly. I'm going to say somewhere even a little south of 4.5 pounds, just going from memory. But, you know, the hands-on time that I had with it, just really well-built machine, beautiful display, beautiful keyboard, and it's going to have some horsepower under that hood as well. Big battery, too. I think it's like an 80-watt-hour battery on board, and that's quite stout for a machine that's not much more over 4.5 pounds in its highest end config. With the 4K panel and with touch, it's a little bit heavier. But what do you guys think about that machine? You got to look at it. I was pretty impressed. Razer is really stepping it up lately in laptops for sure. Good stuff.
Yeah, I think the machine itself is beautiful. I haven't had my hands on it. I have had my hands on other Razer mobile devices. And yeah, they're doing a nice job in terms of the aesthetics, the design language, build quality. They're making some nice choices with the internal hardware. So it seems like a really nice machine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, we've taken a look at a few Razers in our past here. Chris, you reviewed a Blade recently, right? Or no, actually it was a Blade Stealth. Stealth.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I reviewed the Stealth, and you know I love my XPS laptop. As far as I've played with, that's still my favorite, but the Razer Stealth was darn close. Just a couple little nitpicks really kept it apart, so I'd be very eager to see this one in person. Razer makes beautiful, beautiful notebooks, and they've made gaming notebooks beautiful, which is the most impressive part, I think, for me. Because until they came along, so many manufacturers were just coming out with these brick-sized laptops, and you're like, okay, I can lug it around, but I'm going to need a dolly at the end of the day. So yeah. I really, really like what they've done with it. The slim bezel always makes a huge difference, in my opinion. On these notebooks, just making the screen feel that much more immersive, even when it is 15 or even the 13 inch form factor, helps a lot. So really like what I'm seeing with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's funny you mentioned that. We're used to seeing the boat anchor gaming laptop, and that's just not the case as much these days. You still see them out there, but folks like Razer and Dell, for that matter, are driving that envelope. And it's with the help this time around, and in the Razer Blade, we should note, it's with the help of NVIDIA GeForce Max-Q technology. So this is a 1070 Max-Q design laptop. So it has a pretty robust thermal solution on board to get that GPU and CPU horsepower in that thin form factor. So really just a decked out machine with some serious chops that, at least on paper, look like some powerful, potent gaming horsepower to bring to the table, and we are eager to take a look at it for sure. It's one of those coveted machines. You see it out there. It strikes a balance that a lot of folks in the mainstream could be interested in. So we'll have to stay tuned to Hot Hardware. We're going to hopefully get our hands on that sucker, the Razer Blade 15. And the folks at Razer also brought along in New York the new Razer Core X. Now, John, I don't know if you can bring that one up. It's in the same story we posted, bottom of the page. The Razer Core X is a new version of the Razer Core. It is their graphics breakout box technology, if you're not familiar with that. And it is a Thunderbolt-enabled box. John, I don't know if you can bring that up. It'd be good to take. There you go. Thanks, John. Unbelievable. What a guy. So, yeah, there it is. There's the Razer Core X. You can see it's actually slid out from its chassis there. Nice little stylized, again, matte black finish in Razer style with the Razer logo on the side. But when you slide it out, you have a full PSU on board. And that thing, I want to say it's a 650-watt PSU. It's a pretty stout power supply with a dedicated fan, as you can see as well. And you can get up to, you know, a GTX 1080, 1080 Ti in there. And it is all standard off-the-shelf format components inside. So like the power supply, if you wanted to replace it, you could. The fan in there, you know, you can get in there, you can clean it, you can upgrade it and change things around. And it's Thunderbolt compatible. So we'll work with, certainly with any Razer product like a Razer Blade or a Razer Stealth. It's also compatible with any Thunderbolt enabled laptop that is external graphics capable. Good stuff there. The Razer Core X. Have you guys ever played around with any of the breakout boxes? I mean, it just blows my mind that, you know, the thought of firing up a 3-pound, you know, 3-pound ultrabook and, you know, playing a game on it that's serious with a breakout box like that. I haven't tried it yet personally.
Yeah, I've tried a couple. You know, I mean, Thunderbolt passes PCI Express over the cable. So as long as you have external power and the software, I mean, the software, I think, was really what held back the initial rollout of these external enclosures. Once the NVIDIA, Intel, and AMD had the software, and I think Microsoft obviously had to do some work to get Windows to gracefully handle plugging in a GPU in and out. But yeah, I mean, you have limited bandwidth over the Thunderbolt cable, but as we've seen for years, that bandwidth over PCI Express, you know, whether you're in an X8 or an X16 slot, doesn't make a huge difference all the time. So yeah, I mean, you're really just connecting up an external PCI Express slot over Thunderbolt, and it's cool. You can have the, you know, beautiful mobile machine that's thin and gorgeous, and when you get home, plug it into your external box and have a monster gaming rig. So it's pretty good stuff, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah. Really good stuff. So obviously, plug in Thunderbolt, and then plug your monitor in the back of the Razer Core X, and game on a big beautiful like I've got a big beautiful 34-inch curved display with your tiny little notebook. There you go. Pretty cool stuff. The Razer Core X, stay tuned for that as well. We'll hopefully get, I think we're getting that with, there's a new Stealth as well that they came out with 8th gen on board. So we'll get a combo pack with, I think, the Core X there, and then hopefully the Razer Blade 15 as well. So stay tuned to Hot Hardware in the weeks ahead as we fire those up on the test bench. And then before we shift gears off of notebooks, I want to show you guys, actually, this is the previous generation, but this is the Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Yoga. And it's actually the second generation, but we did a review in the third generation machine. And so there you go there. There's the standard downward facing dog yoga pose for the machine. And it's in tent mode. Let's just call it that. Because
tent mode.
We won't go too crazy with the yoga isms. But yeah, so the ThinkPad X1 Yoga third gen, it's now been revamped with 8th gen core technology, a faster NVMe solid state drive. And in this case, we had a 512 gig version, 8 gig of RAM, and we had a Core i5 8250U on board, but it goes all the way up to the 8650U as well. 3-pound machine, beautiful keyboard. John, I don't know if you can cut back to me, but I'll show these guys the Yoga format. Let's get that in. Really nice keyboard. You're what you know and love about Lenovo keyboards, that really nice shaped keycap and trackpad. And of course the red nub is there. And then yes, 360 degree swing hinge and a 3-pound machine. It's actually a serviceable tablet, and you also get a stylus pen with it. Now, what's different about, I'm holding here and it's not fired up. Its battery is actually a little on the dead side currently. But what's different about this machine that I have here, this has got an OLED panel. The new version that we tested, we actually looked at a 1080p version of the machine, and that was a standard 1080p touch display. There's multiple panel options. They don't have OLED anymore as an option for this model. They do have a 1440p, so quad HD, 2560 by 1440, HDR display option, which I checked out on the previous review we did a couple of months ago on the X1 Carbon. So 14-inch display, full HDR, 500 nits of brightness. It is a great panel option to go with this machine if you want a thin and light ultrabook. Again, 3-pound machine with a great keyboard. The ThinkPad X1 Yoga, if you want that flexibility of the 360 degree hinge, for me, I like it because I actually like to have a wide swing, not so much that I use it in the yoga modes, but that I like a wide swing for, like, a lot of times I'll be standing at the counter eating dinner and I'll have my laptop up. You know, I sit all day, so I like to eat standing up.
Crunched up in an airplane seat.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there you go. Yeah, having that flexibility in various spaces is good for that 360 degree swing hinge. But the Yoga is now in its third gen iteration, and check out the review at our site. We enjoyed it. Little gotchas here and there. I will say that there is one that I've been dinging Lenovo on for a while, and that is the SD card slot is stuck in the back. It's actually on this back area right here behind a door. And that is not the most convenient spot. It's really hard to get at, but at least it's there. You can get a micro SD and a SIM into that slot. So, Chris, I know you've seen that design too. It's really good, except for that one little gotcha.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying when you want to do photography with it and have to kind of maneuver the hinge, because it always seems to be in the way when you're trying to put the SD card in. It's workable. It's there, but it could be better. It could be on the side where it's practical.
Right. Yeah.
But at least it's there.
Yeah, it's there. At least it exists, because sometimes it doesn't, and that's a shame. Let's move on from the land of notebooks and talk about some other mobile technology, but this time bringing out artificial intelligence at the edge, to edge devices, to the palm of your hand, perhaps. ARM details Project Trillium, machine learning processor to drive AI to the edge. Chris, you actually spent a couple of days out in Texas with the folks at ARM, right? Sunny Austin? Chris?
Oh.
Has frozen. Oh, so love it, love it, love it.
I helped get Chris's piece live. So while Chris is coming back, I can chat about this.
Dive in, brother.
I will do my best to paraphrase Chris's awesome work, because Chris, there's some really good information. Back. Oh, there he is. Chris. Off to you.
Hey, he's just trying to keep me down.
Go ahead, buddy. We were talking about Project Trillium and your little trip to see the folks at ARM in Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. So you sent me down to Austin to bake. That was nice.
I'm heading there at the end of the month.
Quite a change from Maine for weather, definitely. But yeah, it was a really great trip. There's still more stuff to come, but right now they do have the machine learning processor announcement. So they kind of hinted at it back in February, I believe, with their Project Trillium, which is kind of their push to bring AI across the mobile platform from CPUs, GPUs, and announcing that they were going to have a machine learning accelerator, processor, whatever you want to call it. So part of the specifics of it that they've now released are more architectural, since they did kind of wait a while to jump into the real dedicated machine learning game. They've been doing it with the Mali GPUs and a little on the CPU side, but to really have a machine learning chip, They wanted to go a little deeper with what they're showing off to kind of gain a little customer trust, I guess. So what we're looking at with this is they've got the a fully new architecture built around 8-bit processing, since 8-bit seems to be where machine learning is at. They wanted to stabilize a bit and see where it went. And the industry says 8-bit for the most part. So they've got 16 compute engines, which basically do all the heavy lifting for the neural networks, taking in the feature maps and running some different optimizations on them from compression or with the weights, which is kind of like the synapse connection and is like a statistical bias on your data. So they're pruning nodes and doing different optimizations to get the most performance out of it they can. That also helps them save on memory because, as we know, the cache die space takes up quite a bit on the chip, and it also eats up power and other things that are very, very important when you're putting this in a phone. You don't want to deplete battery life just to apply a Snapchat filter. So some very, very clever things they've done in there to bring out the machine learning.
Interesting stuff. So does this thing have any, did they talk about like tensor cores on board or any of that sort of stuff?
It's their own Mac engines in there. I think they said they have 128 Mac engines per compute unit or compute engine. Sorry. It does support standard software frameworks like TensorFlow and Android. Was it Android Neural Network API and different things? So it should be pretty compatible with a lot of the machine learning research that's out there.
Yeah. And it'll be a coprocessor sort of thing to go in multiple different types of applications, from smartphones to maybe automotive infotainment or something like that, right?
Absolutely. So they really wanted this to be scalable so it can go from any little tiny IoT device standalone up to data center applications. Right now they are targeting mobile first with it. So they want it in cell phones, and they also have a object detection sensor for things like security camera setups that they also announced, but they already gave that information out back with the February announcement. So if you want to read more, it's in the, I think, the first or second link in the article. So they're really targeting those two markets with the machine learning right now.
Yeah.
But it definitely will expand. But they're really focusing on that energy efficiency and computational throughput to keep up with what the demands are for phones.
Marco, Skynet's coming, brother, and the folks at ARM and other places, the Googles, the ARMs, they're all enabling it.
Oh yeah. Oh, we're toast. I've told you many times in the past, we're done. Once the AI takes over, we're literally bags of meat that think we're smart. The robots are going to kill us all. We're done.
Love it. So you checked out this stuff. Did you have any, was there, I mean, you know, honestly, this is a pretty cerebral, deep piece. There's lots to machine learning that most folks don't know about. Were there any sort of interesting takeaways that caught you as impressive for what ARM is doing here versus what you've seen elsewhere? It's heavy reading.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris. Sorry. Oh, I thought it was talking to me. Okay.
Sorry. I'm really just skimming the surface on machine learning with my knowledge of the field. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert, but it's really interesting to see their emphasis on different tricks to manage the data, because machine learning is so data intensive. They're doing zero copy everywhere they can, just moving pointers instead of data through the system, keeping shared cache across the compute units, and really just trying to reduce latency as a result. So you don't have to make calls out to system memory and other things that would slow down and eat into your power budget, your thermal budget, and everything else. So it's interesting just to see the clever tricks that they're applying to that problem.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's funny. There's two types of really two, I wouldn't say types, but two models of machine learning that are sort of currently in the marketplace. And there's everything in between, I guess, a little bit too. There's different permutations. But generally speaking, there's AI at the edge, which is what ARM's going after. And then there's the wisdom of the cloud, which is, you know, AI machine learning in the cloud. Now, machine learning in the cloud is big data centers, lots of power, tons of processing horsepower, lots of feeds. It's the main brain, right? And then the edge is, you know, it's a much lower power application because obviously you're on battery power half the time. You're on wireless, so the bandwidth is a little bit less. And what they need to do is make these little endpoints much more autonomous, so they don't have to rely on the cloud, so they can learn on their own. And then when they get, you know, hooked up to the, you know, to a convenient point where maybe they can just send some data back to the cloud so the cloud learns what they learned. All these little machines talking to each other, right, Marco?
Exactly. You know, what's going to be crazy is this particular setup for, you know, this mobile first approach, it's not going to be some crazy big iron stuff going on, but all of the data that these devices can gather.
Yeah.
Pulled together, I can't even fathom the kind of, you know, interesting algorithms and what kind of information can be extracted from all that data that's going to be pulled from these devices, you know, about us really, and about the whatever the phone is picking up in its environment. It's interesting and scary at the same time.
To that point, ARM is arguing that by having so much more machine learning on the device itself, that data doesn't necessarily need to leave the phone. Right. So they are pitching security and reliability in that aspect.
That makes sense.
Whether the developers hold to that or not is another story. The other thing is the data center is still going to be key for training the neural networks. So all of the initial compute power that goes into designing your AI is still going to be in the data center for now. They're not really looking at having the learning on the edge so much yet. That's a much more difficult problem for them to solve. So it's more making the model and pushing it out to the phones where it presumably, with enough horsepower and good enough training, can run even offline. So, you know, when you're saying, okay, Google, sorry, everyone, there it goes.
Okay, there it goes. You did
And everything else, you know, it's not having to send snippets of your voice out to the data center. It can just interpret it right on the phone and process what you want to say. So there is hope there. But again, it's how the developers use it. It's a tool.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting stuff. And, you know, it's funny, you summoned the demon there, right? to quote Elon Musk. Yeah, no, it's a very interesting thing. It's going to be a horsepower, a technology that, you know, in the future, there's going to have to be governance over, there's going to have to be control, there's going to have to be, you know, legislation, excuse me, easy for me to say. And really just, it's a powerful, fascinating thing. We also saw, and we don't have this in the headlines, but NVIDIA came out with a headline this week. We had a story on it. We don't have it for John, but where they actually announced machine learning in what I'll just call in layman's terms, a monkey see, monkey do model. In other words, they would demonstrate for the robot, you know, with machine vision, something like stacking blocks of various colors. And the robot observed while the human did it, and then the robot repeated it. Now that's wild. And so there, you know, yeah, there you go. John found it. Wow, that was pretty quick. So yeah, there it is.
Layout.
Yeah, right. So yeah, there it is. That's the NVIDIA piece. You check that out if you get a chance. It is fascinating. They have a little video on it showing the demonstration. It's again pretty deep stuff. You know, these are data scientists and machine learning scientists that are doing this stuff. And You know, it's no joke. It's heavy lifting for stuff, but it's always good to put yourself in the know when it comes to AI and when Skynet decides to pull the plug on us, right, Marco?
Yeah, absolutely. Learn everything you can on how to disable these things.
Oh, don't fear what you don't know. It's fear of the unknown, maybe, right?
Nah, I don't care. You'd be doing me a favor taking me out.
Oh boy. All right. Well, let's move on to something that's actually kind of exciting too. Also from NVIDIA. I saw while I was in New York visiting the folks at Razer, I saw an NVIDIA G-Sync 4K 144 hertz HDR monitor. They are shipping now from both Asus and Acer, or will be in a week or two, very soon. And there's the Acer Predator. It's a 27 inch 4K 144 hertz G-Sync capable monitor. So adaptive refresh, right? That technology from NVIDIA, and there's also FreeSync from AMD, but this is NVIDIA G-Sync. It's HDR as well. So absolutely punchy display. I saw it. I was very impressed with it in person. It's expensive. We're seeing prices for pre-orders around a couple grand for these things, which is a lot, but there's a lot that goes into an HDR display, especially of this size.
I love these slides trying to show the difference between a standard screen versus an HDR screen on a standard screen.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. But that's actually a little bit like what you see. It's really hard to reproduce it on a standard color gamut screen. But yeah, it's impressive to see in person, and it made that game, specifically Final Fantasy, look fantastic. It's night and day when you see it side by side, and they had a couple of 27 inch panels, you know, non-HDR and HDR side by side. And, you know, I was driving both and would stop in the same spot and look around, and it was cool. Marco, I know you've seen these in action in previous iterations before they were ready for prime time. What did you think?
So I'm thoroughly impressed with the imagery on the screen. I'm going to back up for 1 second because Asus sent out a press release for their monitor, and official MSRP $1,999 for the 27 inch similar specs. Yeah, these are really pricey, you know. But if you were to write out the holy grail of monitors for a lot of gamers and enthusiasts, it hits basically every single point: super high refresh, high quality panel, HDR. Adaptive refresh technology, tons of adjustability, multiple inputs, aggressive looks. For me, 27 inches, I know this is going to sound snobbish, a touch too small.
Yeah.
A little bit too small, but for the masses, they would probably love the form factor. The price is going to be tough to overcome for, two G's is a lot for a monitor. I'm all for spending as much as you can on a display because it's one of the things that typically carries over through multiple upgrade cycles. I know all of us have probably been on the same monitor for, a couple of years now. I know I am. And before this, I was on one of those, popular 30-inch Dells for I don't know how many years, the 2560 by 1600 res panels. So, I love the displays and what they can do. The price is just such a barrier. It's tough to get over.
Yeah. They showed what goes into the composition of these displays, and the backlighting especially is a lot more LEDs. There's different type of LED technology because you need to represent the color gamut better, better whites. It's just a whole additional cost and expense to produce an HDR panel. And when you look at some of the HDR panels that have come through in notebooks like this Lenovo machine I talked about, they're $200 and $300 upcharges on a notebook price. Now that's a 13 or 14 inch display. When you multiply that to 27, 30 inches, it adds a lot of cost, no question about it. But it's tough. You got to think the technology. Once it's mature, once HDR technology, HDR display technology is mature in the market, that prices will come down, that we'll see some sort of bleed on that, I would hope.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the where displays are headed. You're going to have the many LED backlight with local dimming, and everything's going to be HDR. And everyone that sees it is going to want adaptive refresh rate technology. So, yeah, you're just looking. We're looking at the bleeding edge right now of gaming display technology. And you got to pay for it. I mean, there was development time that went into creating these things, and this is brand new tech, and it's brand new tech that's on the bleeding edge is always pricey. So yeah, in time it will come down, and I'm sure tons of people are going to be drooling over these things. And unless there's some flaw that we don't know about yet, we'll know soon. But yeah, they just hit so many high points. I can't help but think they're going to be pretty awesome in practice.
I want a 34-inch curved HDR with G-Sync. And yeah, throw in 120 hertz minimum.
That's too big. I'm on a 32 now, and it's too big. I know that's weird, but I never use the top portion of the screen. The corners are in my periphery. I think a 30-inch is where it's at.
Yeah. I like the wide aspect.
You like the wide aspect? I want triple 27s.
What's that?
I want triple 27s.
Triple 27s.
Because if you get much bigger than 27, you're going to get way too wide out. I mean, even 24 can be a lot of width with three screens. But I just like having three screens. It's practical.
Yeah.
324s in portrait would be hot.
Wow. You need thin bezels for that, though.
You wouldn't need exactly.
Yeah, right. We're not asking for much, folks. Just make this happen, will you, please? Jesus.
You know, this kind of stuff makes you realize how freaking spoiled we are doing what we do.
Absolutely.
We're like, yeah, 324s, 327. I want a 34. Everyone's like farting around on their 19-inch 1280, you know, 1280 by 1024 displays. And we're like, I want this. Man.
Yeah. First world problems, as they say, right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's move on. We're getting down to the short strokes here in the show. But Marco, you're going to take a look at what Sony has been confirming, that the PS4 is entering its end of life phase, and maybe the PS5. Although Sony didn't confirm this, certainly there's rumors going around that PS5 is on the horizon, and it's rumored to rock AMD Ryzen. Man, that almost rhymes. What do you know, Marco?
There's what we know and what we suspect.
Yeah.
But I personally believe what we suspect is the obvious path it's going to go on. So, you know, the Xbox One and PS4 have been out for a few years now. The life cycle is shorter than the previous gen of consoles, but what these latest ones, because they're essentially little PCs and they're leveraging similar architectures and are fundamentally very similar to a PC now, it makes sense that the upgrade cycle could be accelerated. You know, we saw the Xbox One X and PS4 Pro come out that sort of upped the specs. So it's possible for the console guys now to completely revamp the hardware, make it much more powerful, and maintain all that backwards compatibility and all of the software work, or much of the software work, they've already put into these consoles. So considering the PS4 is nearing its end of life, and it's based on previous gen AMD Jaguar cores and a previous gen Radeon graphics core, it makes sense that the next one will use AMD's latest CPU cores, or some version of AMD's latest CPU cores and newer GPU core technology, whether it's Vega or next-gen Navi, we don't know, but it's going to happen. It simply makes sense for the next iteration of the PlayStation to feature the latest, more powerful technology from the company that, you know, made the first one. If they want to maintain the best possibility of maintaining compatibility and using all their tools again, it just makes sense. So yeah, I think that PS5 will leverage Ryzen based CPU cores, at least 8 of them, or because of hyper-threading, of simultaneous multiprocessing here, or simultaneous multi-threading, it could be quad core 8 thread, who knows, maybe 6 core 12 thread, so they can claim a big upgrade, and a next gen graphics core, probably with HBM2.
You got to believe with Ryzen technology on board, if they're going that way, you got to believe horsepower is going to go up significantly, because just how much faster Ryzen is, that the Zen architecture is, and how much, you know, lower power, more cores you can get in with it, versus Jaguar. I mean, it's a major step up. It put them back on parity with Intel, and that was huge. And to think that they pretty much have owned consoles, AMD, you got to hand it to them. They've owned the console market, you know, and it's a tough gig. It's competitive. I'm sure it's thinner margin for them for sure, but they've owned it. And now, you know, these console guys are going, oh yeah, yeah, we get some, you know, serious juice coming in the next architecture, right?
Oh yeah, it's going to be a generational leap. So, you know, going from a PS4 to PS4 Pro, you know, one of them incremental sort of upgrades, but from a PS4 Pro to a PS5, assuming what we're saying here plays out, it will be a generational leap in performance. Now, what that means to a console is different than what it means to a PC user, because you don't really sit there and tool around on the console much. It's usually get on, maybe run an app or two for streaming some media, but you're gaming mostly. So I think what the target is going to be is, you know, HDR, true 4K gaming, with a really smooth, buttery experience in the UX. So should be interesting. Now, whether or not people need consoles when this next generation comes out, who knows? I think people are still going to want them.
Yeah.
But whoever comes up, it's probably going to be NVIDIA. But that perfect streaming model just makes sense, where you can just sort of license. NVIDIA could license that little shield PCB and put it in Samsung TVs, and you know, you're streaming games to any TV right there would be pretty awesome. But that's pie in the sky type stuff.
Interesting stuff. Yeah, you know, it's fun. People love the convenience of a console. That's what it is. You know, certainly booting up a PC, there's a little bit more to it. But there's a convenience with console gaming, that whether it be the wireless controllers, or, you know, just everything that's set up in the infrastructure, it's convenient. Now, PC gamers, I mean, we're PC gamers to the core, PC master race for sure. If you know what you do, and the experience is significantly better from a graphics standpoint, and, you know, the horsepower we have in PCs, but convenience. Yeah, we still got to work on the convenience aspect, and it's getting better every day for the PC guys. Go ahead, Chris.
I think aside from like bringing a Switch around, which is pretty convenient, I think the PC still has the mainstream consoles beat for that.
Maybe for convenience?
Just my experience. Yeah, I mean, My PC is always on. I can just go hit an icon, I'm in a game, ready to go, no problem.
You know what? The other thing that gets lost in the PC versus console debate. First of all, I love the PC. I'm PC master race as well, but I'm not snobbish enough to not game on a console. I'm perfectly fine with that. But the other advantage PC has is how cheap the games are versus the console games. So the initial outlay for a decent gaming PC might be a few hundred dollars more than a console, but you can literally have a huge library of games for almost nothing on the PC with Steam sales and all the different, I'm forgetting the names right now because I'm an old man, but all the different promos out there to get games. Yeah, you can have a massive library for not a lot of money. That's just not possible on a console. That. Humble bundles, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good stuff. I would play devil's advocate and say that I still think consoles have an edge from a convenience standpoint for most folks. And Chris, you understand driver updates. You understand, you know, all of that stuff. We do inherently.
Yeah, but
I do too.
And with Windows 10, you can set so much of that to automatic now. It takes care of it in offline hours, you know, when you're not using it.
Totally.
It's gotten smarter that way. If you want the console, you got to turn on the TV, you got to flip the input, you got to power on the system.
Yeah, you get some points there. You're right. Yep.
And all these consoles are constantly downloading huge patches and updates still, just like a PC.
So right. We're reaching parity. We're reaching convenience parity is what you guys are saying.
I don't know if we're at parity, but it's not like an Atari was, where you plugged in the cartridge, flipped it on, and played. Right. There's software patches and updates and dealing with batteries and remotes and syncing the remotes and yada, yada, yada. There's annoyances as well. You just, PC guys, we learn to deal with it. Console guys learn to deal with it, and you don't see it after a while is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Joe Nexus 10 in the chat says, a senior Sony software engineer has done Ryzen code commits, so more or less it is confirmed. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's that if I was a betting man and had money to bet, I would bet the farm the next gen consoles feature Ryzen based cores. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's finish up on a Ryzen note. AMD expands Ryzen Pro with Radeon graphics processor family for enterprise, desktop, and mobile markets. Marco, you were going to chat about that a little bit. Ryzen Pro, which is kind of like their answer to Intel's vPro, right?
Yes. So this is existing Raven Ridge technology. AMD made their Ryzen Pro announcements both in mobile and desktop flavors. I think if my memory serves correctly, there's 7 chips that were announced. So on the mobile side, just like the non-Pro variants, there they are right there. So the 2300U on up to the 2700U, 4-core, 4-thread parts on up to 4-core, 8-thread parts, varying clock speeds. And then on the desktop side, the Pro 2200G on up to the 2400GE, or 2400G is the higher end one. The GE falls in between there. And those as well, 4-core, 4-thread on up to a 4-core, 8-thread. And the GPU sizes also vary from an 8CU unit to an 11CU unit. But what the Ryzen Pro parts also get, so inside those Raven Ridge dies are the platform secure technologies, and the remote support technologies, remote management technologies are built in as well, and those are exposed in the Pro parts. So yes, if you're managing a fleet of desktops or mobile devices and you need technology like Intel's vPro, that's what these CPUs offer. AMD's full lineup is out there, and these are the most competitive mobile chips AMD's had in a long while. So partners like, I believe it was Dell and HP, and I believe Lenovo as well, were on hand showing off systems based on these chips. So not only did AMD make the announcement of Ryzen Pro parts, but product partners have product ready and should be shipping soon. So win all around for AMD.
Boy, I tell you, AMD is really kicking some butt lately, right? I mean, you know, they've got a little bit of work to do, certainly in the GPU space. But when it comes to processors, that Ryzen technology, whether it be in the client, commercial or consumer, or the data center for Epic, is really, they're making some inroads. Seriously.
Yeah, they've learned to function in the past when they were really kind of in trouble in terms of their tech. They really learned to work with thin budgets and work really efficiently with their resources. They came up with a really great architecture, and now they have more resources. So, you know, what they're going to wring from Ryzen or from Zen and Zen Plus and Zen 2, I think is going to keep the pressure on Intel for a while. Now, Intel, though, we know Intel is packed full of fantastic engineers. The last time AMD turned the screws to Intel, Conroe came out and just crushed everything AMD had. So we'll see if they can do that again. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a great dynamic in the market, the kind of heavy competition between the two now. It's great to see. And Chris, would you put a Ryzen Pro laptop in your organization as an IT administrator?
So I don't have anything opposed to it, but we don't really use the vPro side of it now. We use more third-party stuff to manage, so we don't care if it's AMD or Intel.
Gotcha.
But that's where we are. So.
So you do remote manage with external software.
Right.
Yeah. Gotcha. Huh.
So the one thing that, if you're not entrenched in this stuff, though, you can actually access the BIOS on a machine that won't boot with a vPro or AMD Pro machine. So that's the really cool manageability stuff that you don't get with lots of third-party solutions. But you know, that's for the real hardcore. When you got to manage a fleet of 1,000 notebooks across the country, you need that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we use a lot of thin clients. So if something's acting up, we just pull it, swap in another one, and then deal with the problem unit. So immediate BIOS level stuff, it's not a need for us, but definitely for some organizations it is.
Yeah. Joe Nexus makes an interesting observation. He says, shame AMD lost Jim Keller to Tesla and then to Intel. Jim Keller was the design architect, the architect lead for the Zen architecture at AMD. And he did AMD a solid with that approach. No question about it. That modular CCX approach, the whole Ryzen architecture is very well done, very well balanced, very scalable. It will be interesting to see what AMD does with not only this technology, and certainly, as you noted, Marco, there's room to grow and legs to go in this thing. But what they do in terms of bringing in architecture talent and what, you know, the follow-on will look like beyond Zen or Zen 2, right? That's a ways out. They've got some time, but yeah, got to keep the beat going, right?
Absolutely. I mean, to do what they did with even the latest ones, even the second gen Ryzen parts are really just a refinement of the first gen parts. So to almost have parity with Intel in single thread and have in many cases better multi-thread scaling in a first gen part, that's pretty good, pretty awesome. Yeah. So yeah, it's good stuff. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff for sure. Well, let's wrap it up. Do we have any contest hints? You know, one of the things we threw out there, and I don't know if there's any folks left in the chat, if you want to give us some ideas, we would like to hear, I don't know, Marco, maybe you have some ideas, but we'd like to hear what everybody might want us to give away next, right?
Yeah. So we announced in the previous podcast, the winner of the last contest. I'm unfortunately still waiting for some parts. So the build video is not done. We will have that up on the channel as soon as it's done and get that machine out to the winner. I promise that's going to happen as fast as possible. But yeah, I mean, if anybody's got some creative ideas on a giveaway, maybe we could do some mobile VR stuff. That might be fun. We have a review of that in the works, or I don't know. We have to think about this. If any of you have ideas, throw it in the chat, throw it in the comments, or even write us. Our email addresses are all over the web, or you can even hit us up on Facebook or Twitter, whatever. Let us know if you have some creative ideas on giveaways, and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
Up in the Discord, link in the chat.
Or that.
There you go. I don't check that often enough, but I know, Chris, you're the Discord disco man.
Usually in there. Marco, we need to get you in there.
I'll go sign up right now. I clicked the link before and I didn't want to sign up during the podcast for fear of screwing up my feed here.
So yeah, we've got connections, as they say. And so yeah, give us some ideas and we'll try and hook you guys up with the next giveaway, the next sweepstakes at hothardware.com, where we try and run a giveaway every month if possible. Hothardware.com, that's where you'll find us on the web. Facebook.com/hothardware, Twitter.com/hothardware, YouTube.com/hothardwarevids, or hothardware, where hopefully you're going to thumbs up this here stream and subscribe where you get notified when we go live next. Right, guys? Join us. We'd love to have you.
Yes.
Yes, gentlemen. Well, that's it for this episode. You guys have a fine week. Any parting words of wisdom before we sign off?
I have no wisdom in me, so I'm going to part with the goodbye. Thanks for watching. Hope you enjoyed it. Like, subscribe, come by the site, have some fun, meet some other geeks, and I'll leave it at that.
What he said. Take care, everybody.